Previously on Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden.
I think Trackhouse Racing goes winless this year.
Okay.
Their sales really went out of them after the Ross Chastain incident, after Darlington, and we mentioned that that was Ross Chastain's first top 10 since Kansas.
5 days later.
Now he's going to have another shot at it. A win here at Nashville for Ross Chastain puts him in the playoffs.
Yeah,
yep, welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden, the show where we make predictions that are sure to go wrong in the NASCAR world. And both me and co-host Jared Haas made horrible, horrible predictions going into last weekend's NASCAR Cup Series race at Nashville Super Speedway. But yours, Jared, yours came to fruition a lot sooner, I'm guessing, than either of us thought it would, with Ross Chastain winning the Ally 400. How are you feeling today after... Your prediction went horribly wrong.
Well, the weatherman's not always accurate, right? Sometimes the model's off. But Trackhouse Racing broke a season-long winless streak. Last win was in Sonoma 2022. Yep. And I kind of noted that. I was like, they haven't won in a while. I mean, even though Chastain's been in the, like I said, in the lead and up front, he hasn't been there, like I said, to secure the deal. So he at least got it done in dominating fashion. That's why I said it was a little bit of a spicy take, but that aged like milk.
Yeah, but yes, Ross Chastain, the watermelon man, is back in victory lane. First time since April of last year when he went
to
Talladega Super Speedway. 4 wins now overall for Trackhouse Racing in their existence. But this was a big deal for Trackhouse Racing and Ross Chastain. This is a win in Nashville. And Nashville's basically their backyard. The team has... headquarters there of a sort. I believe Justin Marks lives there.
That's when he said in his post-race presser, Marks is working on some Nashville-related deals for Trackhouse Racing within the next year. So that's a big win to sell to those sponsors. It's like, hey, you come to the track and see our team win.
Yeah, it is huge for them because they originally had planned to hopefully actually have the team shop located there in Nashville, but once... Justin Marks bought Chip Ganassi Racing's NASCAR assets. They're like, you know what? It's probably too much of an effort to relocate that to Nashville. But again, huge win. We had different viewing experiences for this race, Jared. You were actually there.
Yes.
With FrontStretch.com. You were there for the weekend. I, on Sunday, was at home. And thanks to storm warning coverage, I was pretty much just literally sitting in my living room. Initially listening to the race on SiriusX and NASCAR Radio on my phone. That was my only way I had any idea what was going on because the race wasn't being simulcast on Peacock for whatever reason. So that initially was how I was able to watch it. Then my friend John, the former co-host of Dropping the Hammer, sent me a TikTok link to an account where they were live streaming the NASCAR Drive stream from NASCAR.com. So all it is the battle cam at the start finish line. This one camera, and whoever this user was had also somehow spliced in the PRN, Performance Racing Network's radio stream. So, and then I cast that from my laptop to my TV. So that was my makeshift viewing experience for about the first 80 or so laps of that race. So, yeah.
That's basically the modern version of twisting the antenna to try to get the signal as much as you can. I was surprised with that, but...
So you have more authority on basically the first quarter of this race than I do.
NBC was... It was kind of weird. They moved up the race about 17 minutes because of the weather. It messed things a little bit up, but NBC was... They didn't really have a pre-race show.
No.
They went right into it, and I was even seeing where the broadcast was when they had NBC in the media center. It wasn't turned on until the cars were on the track. So, you know, I was curious to see if even if the race wasn't moved up, how that would have been that pre-race would have been. Because it seemed like it would have been right in when it was the invocation, prayer, and command.
Yeah, it was, like, ideally, that's what I would prefer.
Yeah.
Like, just drop in, hit the big storylines, then just go. Mm-hmm. But I was like, this is NBC's first race of the season. You need to have a little bit of, you know, ramp up to
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But they unfortunately didn't get that.
Yeah.
But so, 300 laps at Nashville, race number three, Ross Chastain wins. What was just your general... You were there, so what was your general just take on how that race went Sunday night?
Fast. I'm surprised how fast that race. It ran about 3 hours.
3 hours, 7 seconds.
Seven seconds, yeah. I mean, that race ran pretty fast, and it was kind of weird, even though, like I said, there was the aero battles that we're mm-hmm. getting into. Martin Truex Jr. wasn't happy about that. But it just seemed like it was very racy, mm-hmm. especially after that one restart where Chastain, William Byron, and Martin Truex Jr. were three wide for multiple laps.
Yeah, I missed that somehow. So
that was impressive, to say the least, that they were able to keep that three wide, battling back and forth. That's what NASCAR wants. And we got in that one restart, but, I mean, it was pretty impressive how, like I said, that restart was. And Ross Chastain, Martin Truex were just trading lap times back mm-hmm. and forth, too. And, like I said, at the end of the day, it was that aero difference that made Truex behind Ross Chastain.
So this went by fast. There was only four cautions, only two for cause. One was for Tyler Reddick losing a tire as he's trying to come down the pit road. What was the other one?
The other one was for Ryan Blaney.
Ryan Blaney, that's right. My prediction that went horrible last week, I predicted Ryan Blaney would win the race, and guess what happened? He was the only car not to finish.
So. Yeah, that's a restart kerfuffle that we'll get into.
Yeah.
But like I said, we had 11 different winners so far through these 17 races, and 10 drivers who won last year that haven't yet in 2023.
That's crazy to think about, that we have so many people who won last year who could still potentially go to victory lane in the next 9 races. That's yeah. how many left down to for the playoffs.
Down to 9.
So that just truly remarkable. But yeah, 4 cautions, 3-hour race. Like, sitting at home, I was entertained. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the great things about the next-gen car, at least on intermediate tracks, is that the leader really can't get out ahead a long distance. Because you had Hamlin, Truex, them battling for lead and just like being a second or less from each other. Then you yeah. had the same thing with Chastain and Truex. They just couldn't get away. So you're just kind of like sitting there just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
But no, Chastain leads 99 laps. I believe here's a stat I found out. Someone tweeted Sunday night. Ross Chastain snapped a Hendrick Motorsports winning streak in Nashville that went back to 1984.
Yeah, because of the fairgrounds and yeah. the last two races as well too.
Yeah, Jeffrey Bodine won the final race at the fairgrounds back in '84, and then Kyle Larson won the inaugural race 2 years ago, and then Chase Elliott won last year. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to Trackhouse for ending that 30-some-year dominance by Hendrick Motorsports.
Well, how about that for Nashville? It's still in Chevy's hands, though. So
yeah. Yeah, so all right. So let's get into some audiovisual supplements to this race. We got some audio from Ross Chastain's post-race news conference. First off, here he was being asked if this was a statement win for him and the team, and Chastain was emphatic that yes, it was.
Did you see the two cars we passed? Felt pretty good. Look, I first met Martin Truex Jr. at a Bass Pro Shops in Fort Myers, Florida, when our local one opened, and he signed a Chevy Trucks hat for me, and I still have it on my childhood bedroom wall hanging up. The Sharpie is about faded off, but it's still barely there. And it's a hero. He was an idol of mine. And then to go to battle against him and then have criticism from him and go back and forth, and him to air block me at Dover like he did when I thought we were just as fast there was humbling. And to go up against my heroes like that, and now to beat him tonight, to drive by him in the 11, was definitely a statement, was definitely felt good, and I'm proud that we were able to do that.
All right, so one thing that struck me not just about the post-race press conference, but also Chastain's like front stretch interview afterwards. It's like, this didn't feel like a guy who just won his third race. This felt like a guy who won his first race, his first cup race. That's saying something because I was at his first win.
Yeah, we were both.
Yeah, we were. That's where we met at Circuit of the Americas.
This is in 2022. Yeah,
yeah. So we were there for the genuine first win celebration, and it felt like it.
Yeah,
it honestly felt like it. But this for some reason this even felt a little bit more because it just it's been a while since he'd won. But given everything that Chastain had been through in the last month with the criticism of his aggressive driving, specifically from Rick Hendrick, and then kind of disappearing.
Remember, there's a lot that's happened between his last win and then. You had the start of the Hamlin-Chastain rivalry. You had the Chastain move. You mentioned the aggressive driving for Ross Chastain. And you had all this happen, but yet Ross Chastain did not win a race. And, especially being in the backyards of Justin Marks, and being the first win of the season, you know, Ross Chastain's going to, like you said, going to show that emotion too. And, you know, Ross Chastain, he's still developing his career, right? Mm. He's been the journeyman driver that's climbed through the series, had those opportunities, you know. He drove for the lower-end teams and then would eventually build up, had with, like I said, the 42 team in the Xfinity Series before they closed down with the sponsorship issues. So he's fought adversity, and he's still making that climb. And I think it's that over that barrier now of all those, I don't want to say negative headlines, a lot of headlines.
Hey, give it a week. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. But it's, like I said, it's just Ross Chastain trying to get in the rhythm where he wants to just win a race without being in the center of a controversy.
Yeah. Well, one thing from his post-race press conference, which we don't have, was him saying, like, he's working towards being Ross Chastain 2.0, and right now he thinks he's at 1.8. So I thought that was interesting. So, but no, our friend and colleague at frontstretch.com, Steven Stump, he was also there with you. He noted that Chastain had led over 900 laps since his last win in April, last April at Talladega. And he asked him just how significant that it was to get this win, just because of that, because they've been so close since then. So here's what Ross Chastain had to say.
Okay, Steven Stump of frontstretch.com. Ross, from your win at Talladega to you taking the checkered flag at Nashville, you led 983 laps in the Cup Series. Obviously, you said you made a statement when you won the pole, passed two really good cars at the end, led the most laps. But how important is this win, knowing how close you guys have been to winning in the last 42 races?
Well, it's bigger than anything. It's an oval. It's a circle track. You have to lift and slide and hit the gas and brake and turn the wheel. So my boys and girls on the one team have not let me forget that. And they have been kind of, you know, pushing me on that. Like, we'll take you serious when you win on an oval track. They've won races. This one team before Trackhouse and I were a part of it. Was very different iterations, but they were winning races in the Cup Series, so they've been here and done it, and they wanted to see me do it on a true oval.
So yeah, like you mentioned, Jared, like Ross's first two wins, he had the contact with AJ Allmendinger on the last lap, then at Talladega. It was kind of weird.
It was a scuffle at the finish, yeah.
Yeah, like...
He just got lucky that Eric Jones and Kyle Larson, everyone was trying to make bad moves, and just Ross Chastain, the seas parted for him. So it was more of a less... Not a fluky win. It was a super speedway type of win.
Yeah. Well, it was weird, because I was on pit road when they were coming through the trioval at that race. And from there, it looked like Ross had gotten into Larson and sent him up the track. But afterwards... When we finally got to see the highlights, like, no, Larson just darted up for
trying to block. Yeah.
So at the time, it felt like, oh boy, two wins, two last lap contacts, but wasn't the case. But yeah, nothing dramatic in this race. Just a clean, simple, dominating Ross Chastain win.
Yeah, let's look through the rest of the top 10. Obviously, we had Ross Chastain in first. Martin Truex Jr. finished second. Denny Hamlin was in third. Chase Elliott was in fourth. Kyle Larson in fifth. William Byron in sixth. Christopher Bell finished 7th. Eric Jones was in 8th position. Kyle Busch, coming back from a speeding penalty, finished 9th. And A.J. Allmendinger with Colleague Racing after winning the Xfinity Series race rounds out the top 10.
All right, before we get into more of that, this was the first Watermelon Smash in a long time. So in case anyone listening or watching isn't aware, Ross Chastain is an 8th generation watermelon farmer from Alva, Florida. And when he got his first Xfinity win a few years ago at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, he had with him a watermelon just to, you know, as a nod to where he's come and the support he's gotten from the watermelon industry. So after that first win at Las Vegas, he smashed it on the front stretch. So here is, and he's been doing that ever since, and he got to do it again this week at Nashville. So here's Ross Chastain just explaining a little bit of his family's background and the genesis of this watermelon smashing tradition now.
Yes, so very first, we used to carry watermelons to track when I was mid or back of the pack, but it was more for the publicity because the ag industry is what sponsored me early on. My first races in 2011 were an investment by my family, but the ag industry pitched in and sponsored me, different companies all along the way, all with the goal of just selling more watermelon. And so definitely when we got the 42 Xfinity ride, we thought, let's have it there, let's raise it at Victory Lane. We won the darn second race we ever ran with that 42 car. I held it up. I didn't really know what to do. And I sat it down on the roof, and we were in the media center, and it was bending the glass at Las Vegas in the media center. And somebody in the room asked what I was going to do with it after the track, or somebody asked me to move it because it was bowing. And I think that glass is still bent, by the way.
It is.
Yeah. And so I said, I don't know, smash it open, knead it, I guess. And they asked if they could film it, and we went out to the front stretch. I stood on the wall, and it was born. It was a natural feeling. It's not something that's sponsored, in a sense that I have to do it. I don't need chug points and all that stuff. But it's a Bayer Seminis watermelon. It's the watermelon varieties that we grow at our farm. We're done with our crop this year. The Georgia crop is being harvested now. And so for those farmers, it's a great year. It was a great growing season for us in Florida. They're knocking it out of the park, breaking records in Georgia right now. And Yosemite Fresh is harvesting out west in California. So, as I've grown in my racing, I've gotten to meet more farmers, which is just so cool for me because all I wanted to be as a kid was a farmer. Like, I wanted to be like my dad, my uncle, my granddad, and every Chastain back 8 generations before me that were watermelon farmers. And the first Chastain came over a long time ago, and not long after that, they started farming. So it's all I ever wanted to be as a kid. I wanted to walk in my dad's footsteps and be just like him. And so for my brother to get to run the farm at home, race a little bit, and we get to promote watermelon, it's our family's business. And really the coolest part was after we won that first race, I wasn't sure how the ag industry would honestly think about it because I was wasting a watermelon. And my granddad called me the next morning and he said, Ross, we will never know how many people in the world saw that watermelon smash. I saw it on my Facebook. And I thought, all right, that's all the affirmation and that's the check mark I needed to keep going, and we've not looked back.
All right. So, Jared, would you eat watermelon that's been smashed on a racetrack?
Victory doesn't taste so much sweet anymore. I mean, if you want a race, and Ross Chastain always has watermelon on hand just in case happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it's good, if it's after you won a race at Nashville after breaking a winless streak of over a year, yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like I said, victory, it can never taste so sweeter than that.
You're right. All right, so digging a little bit deeper into that final top 10, so Martin Truex Jr. finished 2nd. He now has 8 top 10s in the last 10 races. 6 of those are top 5s. He's on a heater still. I don't think he's put up numbers like this probably since his championship run.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely an improvement of Martin Truex Jr., where he's more... he was, like I said, contending last year, but he didn't have that win. He's already got 2 wins.
Yeah.
it's just, I think the summer months, the Joe Gibbs Racing cars start to heat up in May, and then June and July, they start to get their momentum going. And I think this is just still a continued run, which goes into the third place driver, Denny Hamlin, as well. You know, you had Joe Gibbs drivers second and third.
Yep. All right. And so Chase Elliott, who finished in fourth, he now has four top fives in the 10 starts that he's made this year. And he's finished 12th or better in 8 of his 10 starts. And he's now 25th in points. And he needs, if he doesn't win a race between now and the next 9 races, he has to be, you know, in the top 16.
Yeah, he improved upon his, like I said, I think there was an average of 9 points that he needs to gain. He gained more than that in Nashville. So he's on track there. It's just clicking away those solid finishes. I think that he can make that up if he continues that. But if he finds trouble, that's going to be, you know, obviously trouble for that consistent runs. But Chase Elliott needed to do what he needed to do, get those points.
Yep. And all right, last week when we were talking about our surprises for the year so far, I mentioned Erik Jones and A.J. Allmendinger. And then they go out and have solid top 10 runs. Erik Jones, he was 8th? Yeah, 8th.
Yeah, Erik Jones 8th, Allmendinger 10th.
So yeah,
that's the one prediction that got right.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't really a prediction, it was an observation.
Yeah.
And Jones, that's his first top 10 of the season on a non-super speedway. And Allmendinger, that was his third top 10, second in a row, first on a traditional oval. And yeah, it came the day after he won, I believe, his 17th career Xfinity Series race at Nashville in a very, very chaotic Xfinity race.
Yeah, it was his 17th career win. Yeah, that was a very interesting race, to say the least. But, I mean, it's good runs for both of them, Erik Jones and especially Legacy Motor Club, trying to find their footing within the Cup Series now in the lame duck season of Chevrolet. Erik Jones puts him in the top 10. And A.J. Allmendinger quietly stringing in those runs. He's not really been overly impressive, but this is definitely a start for Colleague Racing to build into Allmendinger getting to the playoff runs. And I believe he's only like 24 points back. He is not that far from the cutoff line.
He's 19th right now.
Yeah, and it's pretty close in there. So Allmendinger, if he can get a few more good runs on these road courses that are coming up, he could be a contender to get in on points. But like I said, Colleague Racing just need to click him off, especially at these ovals, in order for him to get in.
All right, so moving on. So yeah, as we mentioned, there was only one DNF in Sunday's race, and that was young Ryan Blaney. Finished last after a restart gone wrong sent him sliding down through the infield, where he impacted a concrete wall near the entrance of turn one. A hard nose first hit that had people really concerned, because for those who don't know, over the last 20 some years, basically starting with the death of Dale Earnhardt in the 2001 Daytona 500, NASCAR has slowly implemented what's called a safer barrier, which is kind of a foam kind of composite type of wall.
It's basically like a springboard against that concrete wall on there.
Well, all it is to allow very hard hits to be absorbed easier on the car. And for the most part, I actually thought that it was everywhere. Like, it had been mandated and had been installed everywhere. Not the case. NASCAR like installs these safer barriers where they feel it's appropriate to be.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be on that turn one inside wall at Nashville going forward, because Ryan Blaney said that was the hardest hit he's ever taken in his life.
It started with the corners at least, and it implemented more on that outside wall where people could still cut across and hit there. I think I looked under the map, and the inside wall in Nashville has it. But as you mentioned, that turn one wall, I went to see that wall post-race, and it's about 8 to 10 inches thick of concrete just there, and there's not something to absorb it. Obviously, you can't have it every wall. You can't have it on pit wall, for example. Crew members are going to need to jump over that. But, I mean, that's the type of the corner where, you know, race cars are going to find a place to hit something. You know, if there's a space, they're going to hit it. We saw with, like, Jeff Gordon in 2008 in Las Vegas. He found that opening at the worst spot. So, like I said, the only way to predict that is to place it everywhere. But that leaves us to a very interesting predicament, as next weekend is Chicago Street Course. Mm-hmm. That's a temporary track. And I didn't really see any safer barriers on those walls yet. But we'll have to see with that. Because that brings up, another, like I said, that interesting point. Now with these temporary race courses, if you're going to have those and you're going to have safer barriers required on that, that's another additional cost and space for the track to have safer barriers more or less on both sides of the track.
So, yeah, Martin Truex Jr. specifically said post-race that he's kind of concerned about next week. But we will get to Chicago here in a little bit. So, all right, you have two things that you want to note before we get into the news. You want to talk about Haley Deegan in the Truck Series.
Yeah, well, I've been quite a bit, I was there this past weekend, and I interviewed Lawless Allen after he wrecked out early.
So yes, Lawless, like, yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is his name.
Yes, Lawless Allen. Couple laps in, Haley Deegan drifts up, makes contact with Lawless Allen. Lawless Allen, tries to beat the DVP clock, the damaged vehicle policy clock, which is 7 minutes. They go out there, they try to restart the race. First corner going into there, something breaks. Lawless Allen wrecks in turn one and two, and he's out. And I was more curious to hear what his thoughts was on the DVP clock, because you just wrecked a truck even more. And he kind of tore into Haley Deegan, says, yeah, she does this to every effing buddy. And, this is the third incident that I've counted with Haley Deegan running into them. It was, like I said, this weekend at Lawless Allen. You had Dean Thompson at North Wilkesboro and, I believe, Caden Honeycutt at Circuit of the Americas. And it's been a tough transition. I don't know if you remember anything about the Haley Deegan, especially climbing up through the ARCA series, but it seems like she was heavily marketed as the next driver.
No, she was.
Yeah, and really struggled this year. You think Thor Sport, having more of a veteran experience, because last year she was with David Gilman Racing, Tricon Garage. She was the older driver. There was, like I said, there was the two full-time drivers with Tricon. She was the older of the two. It was one of the Gray brothers that drove. But the season so far, you have Ben Rhodes and Matt Crafton running full-time for, like I said, with Thor Sport. If you look at those two drivers, you have Matt Crafton, average finish of 14th. Ben Rhodes' average finish of 11th, and then you look at Haley Deegan's average finish of 21st.
Yeah.
Not really a good look. And let me check in Ty Majeski's numbers as well.
No, yeah, she's had 59 starts across four seasons and has four top tens.
And Ty Majeski has an average finish of 12th. So it's been a really disappointing, Truck Series career for her. The one bright side is, I believe, in her Xfinity Series debut, she scored a top 15 finish. So I'm curious to see how she does in the Xfinity Series, because they drive different than the Truck Series.
Mm-hmm.
But it brings that question of, like, is the Truck Series best for Haley Deegan? Because I would argue this is a better opportunity with a more established team, more experienced teammates here at Thor Sport, and she's not really delivered in the first 13 races. So it brought up an interesting conversation talking with Lawless Allen. But, hopefully so. She can turn around the second half. Playoffs are starting soon for the Truck Series. And then, of course, the good old coming back from the racetrack. I was driving back in a rental car. Fortunately, it wasn't my personal car. I was about 15 minutes away returning the car on Interstate 40, getting ready to go on Interstate 30 West to get through into Little Rock, and something flew through my windshield. I don't know what it was. I didn't see it, and all of a sudden, I just had smashed right into the window, put a 4 to 5 inch dent into the windshield. Glass was scattered everywhere on me, and even glass was found in the back seat of the car. I don't know what I hit. It wasn't like a bird or anything living. It was either, just like a rock, big old rock or rubber, whatever it was. It made a pretty big dent. Fortunately, we have insurance on that, but that was a pretty intense moment, having something fly at your windshield.
I imagine.
And just have glass all over me. Like I said, I didn't get anything big cuts. I just have some minor cuts here and there, like on my arms and legs, but it wasn't anything too major.
What was the rental place? What was the reaction when you showed up with a hole or whatever in the windshield.
They said that was the craziest damage they've ever seen to a windshield. They've had cars been flipped over and returned to the rental company, but that's the craziest damage they've seen to a windshield.
That's crazy.
Yes.
That's crazy. All right. So moving on from Nashville, now we'll get into a little bit of news for this week. All right, so first off, some pretty tragic news that was broken earlier today. So it was expected that Jimmy Johnson, seven-time Cup Series champion and co-owner of Legacy Motor Club, would have competed this weekend at the Chicago Street Course race in the number 84 car, but that entry has been withdrawn. It was withdrawn after the news broke that Jimmy Johnson's in-laws, father and mother of Chandra Johnson, Jimmy Johnson's wife, had been, and Johnson's nephew, had been found at their home in Oklahoma, and police are investigating that as a murder-suicide. So Jimmy Johnson will not be in this weekend's race. So that's just very unfortunate, very tragic, and my thoughts are with that family. No one wants to go through that. So yeah, if there's any other updates to that story in the future, we will bring those to you. So some news that was made official last week, Jared, that we didn't get to talk about. Josh Berry was announced as the replacement for Kevin Harvick officially in the number 4 car at Stewart Haas Racing next year. Josh Berry is currently 32. He will be 33 when the season starts at Daytona in February. It's been a while since we got to talk about a high-profile rookie of the year candidate, that was over the age of 30. Josh Berry, 33. The last time there was a full-time Cup Series rookie, a guy who competed in every single race, didn't miss anything, and was over the age of 30, was Juan Pablo Montoya in 2007, back with Chip Ganassi Racing, or was it Ganassi Earnhardt at the time? Either way. It has been a while since we've been in this kind of situation. So what was your reaction to Josh Berry being announced as the official replacement for Kevin Harvick in 2024?
Well, like I said, forget about what was going 20 years ago, the young guns. Now with this dog-eat-dog world, you need more and more experience. And this is going to be the big question of Josh Berry. Can he hold the consistency of Kevin Harvick?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot has been talked about that, but that's the one thing that this move proves is like, now it's going to be, if you're going to get in the Cup Series, you're going to be 30. It's not going to be 19-year-olds anymore, mm-hmm. unless you're Ty Gibbs, but it's going to be a lot harder climb. But I will say Andy Lally tried to attempt the full season when he was 36 with TRG, missed a few races as well. But yeah, like I said, it's been a rarity more than a common occurrence that people over 30 are being rookie of the years now. But that was back in the day before Jeff Gordon was a rookie. You know, these team owners wanted experienced drivers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to go with some 21-year-old young buck. They were going to go with someone that was experienced. And it seems like we've gone back to that era of going for 30-year-olds that have that experience for the rookies now.
So what makes this even more interesting, because we don't even know for sure if Eric Almirola is going to be coming back next year. So depending on if Almirola actually hangs up this time and he leaves, so you also have to fill in the number 10 car. That would leave Josh Berry, Ryan Preece, and Chase Briscoe. So there's a very likely possibility that Josh Berry will be the veteran leader of this team as a rookie, which is just fascinating. Fascinating to me.
It's the team. Like I said, it's how the team makeup is, and, you know, The path to the Cup Series is not a straight line. I think that's the biggest thing to remember is, you know, you can have some people that are experienced and they're 26 years old, and then you have, like, rookies that are in their 30s.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's a lot of that going on these days. You just look at Ross Chastain's path to the Cup Series wasn't really traditional. Alex Bowman wasn't traditional. And so, I mean, A.G. Allmendinger's back in the Cup Series. Mm-hmm. It's the whole the old ABC route, the ladder system, it's kind of been thrown in disarray a little bit over the last few years. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, you can't get in the Cup Series.
Yeah.
Unless you want to throw a lot of money in trying to get an extra entry like Colleague is, but there's not really that good in return on investment unless you have sponsorship coming in and have a program already established.
All right. So that's all the news we have for today. So now it's time for our preview of the inaugural NASCAR Cup Series race weekend on the streets of Chicago. All right, Jared. So I'm excited for this weekend because just a month ago, NASCAR was in the backwoods of North Carolina, returning to North Wilkesboro Speedway for its first race there since 1996. And now we're taking a step into the future. The NASCAR Cup Series will hold its very first street course race this weekend in Chicago, which is... And it's just weird that it shouldn't have taken this long, but this feels like an obvious thing that NASCAR should have done a long time ago, and they're doing it with the Grant Park 220, a race 100 laps, 220 miles, around a 2.2-mile 12-turn course, temporary course through downtown Chicago. What is your excitement level, interest level for this historic NASCAR race?
I think first and most is historic. That hasn't been in the top three series there's ever been a street course. ARCA has run a street course back in 1994, but not with any of the three series. Not even when the Truck Series was established. That's when the last time there was a street course within NASCAR and ARCA's Truck Series didn't even exist. So it's been a while with that. So, you know, history is being made there for the NASCAR schedule of being on the streets of Chicago. Curious, though, it's going to be how it's going to be racing in real life. You know, you have a lot of tight corners, and you have the streets of Chicago not going to be the smoothest of racetracks out there, too. So going to be interesting who's going to be the driver that's going to get, you know, the fastest lap, because I don't think it's going to be really easy to pass, but also who's going to be someone that's, I'm looking at somewhere like a Watkins Glen type of track.
So technically, would you count Montreal as a street course that Xfinity raced on?
No.
Like, it's like half and half, though, isn't it? Like,
no, it's a full course.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, on that point, there really hasn't been anybody that's in the Cup field that's raced on a street course except AJ Allmendinger and Michael McDowell. Those are the most high-profile ones that I'm aware of, because they both competed in open-wheel car, IndyCar, and they have experience racing on street course. So Michael McDowell was made available for a press conference today via Zoom, where he got to talk about the prospects of this race. So it had been a while for him. So here's what Michael McDowell had to say about what the aggression levels will be like on a street course like this.
Yeah, I think that you're going to be aggressive. I mean, all of our races are still going to be track position, so you're going to want to make sure you're, you know, staying up front, keeping track position, doing all the things that you need to do. But at the same time, you're, you know, very narrow and surrounded by concrete barriers, and you can't make any mistakes. So that's what's the challenge of a street race is you got to go for it, but you know, when you take those risks, it's worth time. So you got to balance when to do that.
All right. And I got the chance to ask Michael two questions today. First was how he thought this race would be different because he's, like I said, it's been about 15 years since he was in an open wheel race on a street course. So here's what McDowell had to say about how this could possibly compare to what he experienced in an open wheel car.
Yeah, it's been a while, for sure. You know, I think the biggest thing is just the visualization when you're sitting in the car and references and being able to adapt quickly to not knowing where you're going and finding the bumps and finding the markers and doing all those things. And, you know, each track is unique for that. So it's just being able to do that quickly.
I'm curious, what do you expect the aggression level to be when you're in a cup car that has bumpers, has fenders, on a narrow course like this compared to an open wheel car, which is very fragile and you desperately want to avoid banging wheels and fenders?
Yeah. So I don't know. I think I'm fairly unique in this response. I feel like street courses are so tough by yourself that your level of aggression is turned down sort of automatically because you're just trying not to make a mistake on your own, let alone when you're trying to set up a pass and things like that. You know, there's, if you look at our style of road racing, you know, for sure it's super aggressive wheel to wheel, but we always have a lot of runoff and we always have areas that have a lot of forgiveness. So turn one in Indy, you bury it down in there because there's an oval, grass, access roads. When there's a 90 degree concrete barrier, you're going to think twice about burying it down in there. It's just the reality of it. So calculated aggression is going to be what wins this race. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of what we typically see on our road courses, in particular on the, you know, starts and restarts and things like that.
All right. So going into this race, like I said, 100 laps, 220 miles. We've never done this before. Do you think it will be a good race?
Define good.
Do you think it'll be more than a parade?
I think there's going to be a little bit of chaos involved, and I could sense that from the drivers when we were talking to them last week in Nashville, that there's going to be some craziness. Like I said, it's going to be a wait and see. This is why we're doing this, to see, is this a feasible thing? Is this a good racing product? Because, you know, we had like COTA, really. It's been, the road course has been kind of shaky this year. Sonoma, not really a wowser of a race. Circuit of the Americas was turning into a great fuel mileage race, and then everything hit the fan with a few laps to go. Everyone tried to dive bomb, and with these 90 degree corners, they're probably going to do that. So, but I mean, I think the experience will be all right at the racetrack. I think it'll be a good event, a gathering, but the race product, you know, I'm not going to be like, I'm going to 100% guarantee this is going to be the best race that's going to be this year.
No, I don't think so, but it would be great if it was. So
we'll see. Again, you know, it's already in trouble waters with Chicago trying to figure out logistics of hosting a race in downtown Chicago. But like I said, it's just sit back, relax, and just enjoy this race, and let's see how it plays out. Then we can dive into this and decide, hey, you know, is this good? Is this bad? Need another year? What's going on?
But, you know, like, seeing on Twitter and stuff, there's lots of fans who are just, like, already throwing in the towel on the race, saying, it's not going to work. It's going to be a terrible race. It's like, let's just see what happens. Like, you know, it's...
we're here.
So
let's worry about next year.
Yeah.
After this weekend.
Yeah. But, and I will be there this weekend. I will be at Chicago covering the race for frontstretch.com. And, like, I'll be writing a column about this. It was like, this is one of the biggest NASCAR events in recent memory. Just the fact that it's happening.
Yeah.
But it's going to be like the first clash at the LA Coliseum. It'll be like North Wilkesboro in the All-Star race. As long as like the track doesn't like fall apart underneath them, or there's some catastrophic accident or something like that, that's a black eye for the sport. Like, as long as they can get from the green flag to the checkered flag, and everyone's having a good time, it's at this party atmosphere and all these concerts, if it just can go off maybe minor hitches, it's a success. This does not need to be a barn burner. This like North Wilkesboro, it's about the event.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's more the street course is more like the clash. It's more about the glitz and the glam of being in downtown Chicago
and proving we can do it.
Yeah. The logistics of shutting down a street. I mean, if they're wanting to look back and going, oh, let's go to New York, you know, you're going to have to say, oh, we're going to have to shut down these streets and blocks and all that. And you know, if you're Chicago's the good test guinea pig of that, and you know, it might be where even doing it like a smaller size, you know, smaller size city, if I say that. Hey, shoot, it might even happen in Little Rock.
I don't know about that. I thought it would be cool to do a race through downtown Indianapolis.
That would be interesting.
Race around the fountain that's in the circle.
Yeah.
There, that would be cool. But no, I'm going to be there. I'm excited. I'm curious. I don't know where, like, they're parking haulers. Have you seen anything
about that? I would assume inside the track. You know, well, I mean, it's going to be interesting. They're probably going to be inside of the track. And there's not really, like I said, because there's that enclosed area, you can't really, you know, you're either going to have to exit the track or have them within. I don't know with that, but it brings the point. There's not really any tunnels to lead you out of the infield.
No. I mean, they made it work for L.A. Yeah. They parked those haulers somewhere, and so.
But again, this is a lot bigger infield than the L.A. Yeah. Coliseum.
They were parked outside the track.
Yeah.
Like down the street.
But I'm saying with this that, you know, pit road's in there. You have, you know, like I said, a lot more in there because the pits were outside of the L.A. Coliseum. If you forget something going on during the race, you can't just simply go across the racetrack. You can't go under the tunnel to go out there. So, yeah. Well, you'll have to report on that, and you'll keep us posted on that.
I'm just curious to see how it works. Like, it's I've never been to a street course for IndyCar or anything like that. So I've never been to a street course race. So the fact that my first one will be the first NASCAR one, that's pretty cool to me. So all right, prediction time. Predictions that are sure to go wrong. there hasn't been practice. There hasn't been anything. We have no idea. We don't know anything.
It's just the sim work that they've done, and you know the iRacing races they've done.
And McDowell said that he thinks the simulation version makes exacerbates some of the bad things that could be part of the track, or exaggerates. That's the word I was looking for. Exaggerates the bad things. So, you go first. I need a little bit more time to think about it. Who are you taking to win the Grant Park 220, the first one ever?
I'll take my Powerball numbers, please. yeah, I mean, this is going to be some type of race where track position is going to be key. You're going to have people that, you know, like I said, you have a lot of 90-degree turns. You're going to have a lot of technical turns, but a lot of speed. Again, what I said, mentioned Watkins Glen. What team has won the last four events at Watkins Glen?
Hendrick Motorsports,
yeah. I mean, I expect Kyle Larson to perform well. And I, same people like Sonoma with Truex and Hamlin was up there. Hamlin won the pole. But, I mean, I expect the cream to rise on the top. I don't expect to be an outside force. Like, all of a sudden, Mike McDowell or Todd Gilliland comes across the start-finish line and wins this race.
Hey, McDowell.
McDowell's talented.
Had a winning car at Sonoma.
Yeah. I mean, but I still think it's going to be the cream that's really going to rise to the top.
So who you taking?
Take Kyle Larson.
Kyle Larson? Okay. Kyle Busch said this was going to be a race of survival.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Austin Cindric has any street course experience in sport cars. I have no idea. But I'm going to take someone who has the history on street courses, has taken his racing knowledge from other disciplines and made it successfully in the NASCAR Cup Series. I'm going to take AJ Allmendinger to win.
It's going to be pretty interesting if that he can seal the deal with Colic Racing. The question is going to be, where's the eye of the storm going to be at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to happen. That happened at the road courses of, you know, where these drivers are dive bombing 4 or 5 wide in the corner. You had that, and then these people got wrecked. That's the question is going to be, where's the eye of the storm? Is this going to be more up front? Is this going to be back half the top 10, even farther back in, like, the 20s? I think that's the question we don't know, and we'll find out pretty quickly in the race.
Well, this is one of those times where I can't wait for practice. Like, I can't wait to see them on the track figuring this thing out for, I think it's an hour practice.
Yeah.
So, can't wait. History in the making. I'll get to be there.
An Xfinity race will be there as well, too.
Yes, there's an Xfinity race the day before. So, yeah. I'm excited. We're all excited. We're all interested. We got lots of questions, and we can't wait to see the answers. So, but that will do it for us this week at Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can reach me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden. You can email me about the show at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. And Jared, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at RealJaredHaas and catch the race on 4:30 p.m. Central Time on NBC.
That's right. And please subscribe, like, give us a rating, help other people find the show. Tell your parents, tell your friends.
Tell your parents' parents.
Tell your parents' parents. So, yeah. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you back here next week to talk about the results of the first annual or the inaugural Chicago Street Course race. Thank you and have a great week.